Well, hey there, everybody. It's me, the J-Strom, here at Satrial's in Jersey. Isn't that right, Bill? I swear I'm here.
Yes, where the veal cutlets are only $6.99 a pound.
That's right. We're just around the corner from the poultry store, and we're having a good time. We're here for our first ever self-contained Sopranos special edition. We're having a little sit-down talking about six episodes of Sopranos that we've lost track of trying to do our show. It takes up too much time of our regular show, so we're doing this special contained episode. And,
yeah, and not everybody watches or likes The Sopranos, so it's better if we just do it separate from everything else.
Yeah, some people probably don't even have HBO or something.
Exactly.
If they don't, I don't know why. But now, the last episode we covered was called Mayhem. The next episode we need to cover is called The Fleshy Part of the Thigh. Vaguely remember this one. This one had to do with one where Polly finds out that his aunt, Dottie, is actually his mother, who was a nun most of his life, right?
Yeah, Aunt Dottie was a nun.
On her death...
I love the way she says it, though. I've been a bad girl. she's like dying, and she's like 80, 90 years old, and it's, I've been a bad girl.
Oh, well, my favorite part is Polly brings her some slippers that don't fit on her feet, and he goes, just put them on her feet. Her feet are cold, but they don't fit. Yeah, it's just like, just jam them on there. I love that. So basically, Polly finds out that Dottie is his mother. Does Polly think that, well, the woman I think is my mom, Nucci, was she a lovely, loving person to take Polly in? No, she betrayed him.
Yeah.
He gave her a son's love.
Yeah, I love Polly's reasoning. He's such a selfish prick.
Yes, he is. He's a horrible...
This woman raises him.
Four G's I play for this
for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because he gives her a little bit of money, all of a sudden it's betrayal.
It's all about how much money. I spend four G's on this place a month. You know, what do your real blood your son and daughter do? Nothing. You know, I guess that's jumping ahead in the episode, but basically you can see that Polly feels betrayed, right? And he's very distracted the whole time. Other things are going on in the episode.
Well, I think the Polly storyline is very central to the... I mean, there's two different ones with Tony, you know, finally out of the coma and dealing with life after death, all that. But you also have this whole Polly feeling betrayed.
Right, and also there's another kind of son and mother thing going on with Jason Barone, whose dad, I guess, owned the waste management company. And he died, and now Jason doesn't know. He's been kept in the dark his whole life about this gangster stuff, it seems.
Yeah,
like.
only his mother and his father knew about it.
Yeah, he's planning on selling to Chucky Cinelli. You know, Tony's like, hey, I insist, let me take care of this or whatever, but the guy's stupid. You know, he does something stupid. You can tell he is. He just doesn't have a clue. His mom didn't hip him to anything, right?
Well, I wouldn't call him stupid as much as just naive.
And there's kind of a thing going on there, but also Tony is still in the hospital. He's recovering. And he's met this nice scientist played by Hal Holbrook, who's there for some kind of respiratory problem.
Who's playing someone other than Mark Twain for once.
Yeah.
Time off from his Mark Twain tour to appear on The Sopranos.
Which is good, you know. He's got to get some time in as the ailing patient. But there was a nice kind of thing going on here, and it was science and religion. Because who shows up but Pastor Bob? And I'm trying to remember the other guy's name. Aaron Arkaway. And he brings Pastor Bob with them, and they're there to pray with Tony and talk to Tony. Apparently, they're outside picketing because someone at the hospital would not fill a prescription for birth control. And Tony has this big thing. I don't know. It kind of like involves me because I mean, you know, what is your stance on Viagra? Because I'm going to need that for a while over there. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's always about themselves. These guys are so selfish.
But there's also a rap artist who's been shot several times named Deluxe on Tony's floor. He's got his old posse there. And there's this strange subplot with one of the guys in Deluxe's posse named Marvin. He's got his own rap going on, and Deluxe is supposed to set him up with a cool record deal, but now he's thinking that's all screwed because Deluxe... he's getting all the attention now. His record sales are going up because an attempt was made on his life. And Bobby,
street cred.
Yeah, and Bobby's already been kind of yelled at by Tony, because Tony's already pissed off at him for even being shot in the first place. You know, in the back of his head, he kind of blames Bobby because he had to go.
Well, he was too busy playing with his trains instead of taking care of Junior.
And he says, you know, you're going to have to start pulling your weight out of this. So Bobby overhears what's going on, and he kind of approaches this guy, Marvin, and he tells him that, hey, if you got shot, maybe that would help your street cred too. And they come up with this plan to shoot him in the fleshy part of the thigh. I think it was like $10,000, and he didn't have enough. And he's like, that's all I got, man. He's like, all right. To Bobby, he says, I don't want to know when it's coming. Don't let me know when it's coming. He's like, all right. And there's this great scene where he's getting some fast food, and he's walking out. And all of a sudden, bam, right in his ass. He's been shot in the ass, and all the food just went. He shot me in the ass. And I wasn't sure, you know, because remember, Bobby kept telling him, I'm an expert marksman. Don't worry about it. Now, did he do it on purpose, or do you think he just wasn't an expert marksman?
I think he did it on purpose because he was getting cheaped on the money.
Yeah. Well, I have a clip here, and it's when Pastor Bob, the creepy Pastor Bob, comes in to visit Tony while Christopher's there, and so is Hesh, and I guess Hesh's daughter. Well, Pastor Bob comes in, and he kind of interrupts, but Tony's like, yeah, okay, come on in, and this is what happens.
Dinosaurs, my kids can't get enough.
Yeah, me too. Ever since I saw King Kong kick their ass in the original. My son loves dinosaurs, too.
That's interesting.
What?
Some people would have you believe dinosaurs existed millions of years ago. It's just not true. God created the Earth 6,000 years ago. And I tell my kids, you have to remember, dinosaurs and human beings lived on the Earth at the same time.
What, like the Flintstones?
It's in the Bible.
But what about all that carbon dating stuff? A lot of scientists would disagree with you.
I think you'll find those people all have an agenda, Tony. Evolution, which is Satan's plan to deny God. Evolution and salvation are mutually exclusive.
The guy next door is a scientist. Thinks he'd disagree with you big time.
Then that man's not saved. Read about Mr. Coulson. We'll talk later.
Oh, you brought him this religious book.
What's he saying? There were dinosaurs back with Adam and Eve?
I guess.
No way. T-Rex in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve will be running all the time, scared shitless. But the Bible says it was paradise.
The Bible says it was paradise. And there was my daughter in the background. Could you hear that?
Yeah, I thought maybe you were adding an Adam and Eve yelling away from the dinosaur there.
I love that. Christopher is such an idiot.
But he really is.
It is a keen observation, though. If dinosaurs were in the Garden of Eden, wouldn't Adam and Eve be scared shitless all the time? So, now, Pastor Bob, I was wondering if we were going to see Pastor Bob again, and who knows, maybe we will, because he invites Tony to his church, right?
Yeah, and Tony is, you know, contemplating life and religion at this point.
Right.
Continuing into the next episodes.
And meanwhile, Jason Barone's mom shows up, and she's really worried. She doesn't want anything to happen to her son. And she's saying, Tony, he didn't know. We never told him. And Tony's like, nothing's going to happen to him. And there's this great scene where she's crying about her son's safety. She doesn't want anything to happen to him. And you see Polly, he runs out of the room. He goes around the corner. And he's like sobbing. But this is after a scene where he goes to confront Nucci. And a great scene where he throws her, what is it, LCD TV out the window.
Yeah. And it tosses it right out the window, and I love the wide shot of it crashing to the sidewalk while some person in a wheelchair wheels by the opening where it falls.
He's such a horrible person. He's so mean to that lady. He's like, you're cut off.
He's mean to everyone that doesn't... he's just so selfish. If it's what have you done for me lately, for Polly? Everything. It always has been.
That sanitation company is being sold. Tony's out of the loop. And he's making a big deal out of it because he needs, like, to show his taxes and all that, right?
Well, it's also, the other problem is it's also being sold to this Chucky Cianelli, but he's connected to Johnny Sack.
Right.
So Tony's got to go through Phil, and who then goes to Johnny to figure out how Tony can keep himself in the loop, because this is one of this waste management company is one of Tony's only legitimate paychecks in W-2s, and he needs that to have that air of legitimacy and not just mob.
When Phil comes to Tony, Tony turns down the first offer, saying it's BS. Then later, Tony gets to go home, right? And there's this weird subplot with the insurance lady, too, I forgot about. How her job is to get you out of the hospital as quickly as possible so the insurance company doesn't have to pay that much money.
Yeah, and at first, Tony's really attracted to her, and then when he finds out who she is, he berates her with numerous four-letter words.
Yeah, he's like, get out of here, you see, or whatever he says.
Yeah, he digs deep into the repertoire of female insults.
Yeah, Tony has a way with words. And Phil comes to his house, and he makes an offer this time, which is he gets to keep his paycheck and a W-2 for 10 years and 12% of the sale price, but no skim over time, right? Is that like a weekly skim or a monthly skim or something like that?
I don't think they ever specified it.
And Tony agrees to it, and Phil seems a little taken aback by it, like, oh, really? And maybe it's a sign of weakness he agreed so easily. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Tony's confused in that he's in this spot right now where he needs to be cooperative with the New York group to earn trust, yet because he's laid up after being shot by Junior, people see him as weak.
Right.
And it's really playing with his head right now.
Now, at the same time, Tony promised that Jason Byrne wouldn't be hurt, and the guy's going to do his little rowing thing in the water. I don't know what you call that.
I have no idea.
Then here comes Polly with the lead pipe and starts hitting him in the kneecaps and tells Jason that he needs to kick up $4,000 a month to him and not a word to Tony, or he's a dead man. He pulls out a gun. So basically, is that $4,000 Nucci's payment to stay in the old folks' home?
I have no idea, but it came out of nowhere and just shows how unpredictable Paulie is. He's going to be a major problem for Tony in future episodes, I think.
Right. You know, you kind of wonder, they set up all sorts of different subplots, different things going this way and that way, and you wonder if it'll turn up again. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's just a thing that goes nowhere, you know?
Well, I don't think it necessarily goes nowhere. It just shows what these characters are capable of, who they are as people. It shows how selfish and how crooked Polly is. You want to love this character because he's so unique and he's so funny at times, yet it just shows that these people are scum.
Right.
They don't care about you, they don't care about anyone else except themselves and the money that they get from it.
And that's exactly what it shows about Polly, is it's all about Polly and he's being betrayed.
Yeah.
Now, let's go ahead and move on to the next episode, which was Mr. and Mrs. John Sacramone Request. And it was all about Johnny Sack's daughter getting married.
Hoofa.
Which was which is a great episode.
That was unique. That was really funny, the scene of them trying to figure out the wedding stuff in jail. And you have his daughter who's getting married, who's just ginormous. And then you have the other daughter who's anorexic.
Yeah. Smoke, and they all smoke cigarettes, too.
Yeah.
If you thought Johnny Sack looked unhealthy smoking, his whole family looks like they're about to drop dead. They're all smoke puffing away. And do they ever say what his daughter's name is? Allegra. What is that, a cold medicine or something?
Yeah, that was a great clip of Christopher. But I think one of the things I enjoyed about this episode the most, and you can always tell when somebody good is directing, and it was Steve Buscemi who directed this episode.
Right.
And it was just, when he directs episodes, he always adds these little quirks, and we'll get to them as we talk about the episode, but it was one of the better ones.
Right, and the episode starts out with Tony getting a new driver, this kind of young buff guy who's kind of a hothead.
Vin Diesel's clone.
Right. Yeah. And he's like, Tony, the first thing, he's like, so how much you lift? How much you work out? Or whatever. And he almost gets an altercation with these guys who cut him off, like, immediately. And Tony's telling him to calm down. So he's like, already, the guy's a hothead. And
I just remember the guy's name was, like, Jerry or Perry or something. It wasn't, it didn't befit the way this guy
looked. Oh, yeah. His name is Perry, yeah.
Perry.
And what Tony heads to the pork store. Everyone's like, hey, Tony. Christopher's automatically like, check out this guy. You know, he's like comparing his ailments to Tony's. It's just really funny. You know, everyone's like, hey, Tony, here's a seat or whatever. And he's taking the seat and they're offering him something to eat. And he's like, no, I'm all right or whatever. And this is when Phil shows up and he tells him that John wants him to get rid of the Munchkin. The mayor of Munchkinland, he says. And it's that guy, Rusty.
Yeah, and, the Frankie Valli who plays Rusty.
Yeah, and Tony turns him down flat out. He's like, I'm not doing any more of his dirty work. It's time to set some limits. This is my favorite. I love this part because already the agents in a few episodes ago put it in Christopher's head, like, do you know any guys who might be terrorists? And these guys are like, hey, Christopher, do you know how we could get some semi-automatic Tech Nines? And he's like, Tech Nines? What for? And he goes, ah, it's just protection. It's a family problem. Don't worry about it. It seems very suspicious that they want these Tech Nines.
Well, not only are they requesting these guns, aren't they the guys that are picking up, like, credit card numbers, like hundreds of credit card
yeah,
numbers?
Yeah, that's their business. Swipers? They get credit card numbers, and that's scary. This show scares the crap out of me when it comes to all that credit card stuff. Now, meanwhile, we know that you know, they kind of delve into Junior here and there, and he's locked up. And it's obvious Junior's a freaking nut job, but...
Yeah, he's lost it.
But there's
also nothing going on up there.
There's also the part where everyone shows up at the wedding, and they're, like, around the block, and you're like, man, there's a lot of people at this wedding. But then they show what the thing is Johnny Sack has been granted permission to go to his daughter's wedding, but... he has to pay for all the security, like metal detectors and everything. And people are waiting in line forever to get in this church. And Tony, he keeps setting off the beeper, right? They tell him to take his shoes off, and he almost, like, collapses on the ground. And you could tell, like, people are looking at him like he's thinking he's showing weakness, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when they're in the church, and Christopher's like, Allegra. Isn't that like a cold medicine? And what does Polly go? It means beauty, or I forget what he says, but...
It means something. It means like beautiful in Italian or something.
Yeah.
Because what's it got to do with cold medicine?
But there's the genius scene where they're at the reception, right? Where it looks like they're paying way too much money. I think Johnny Sack said it's like $500,000 for this thing. Like $450,000. Oh, man. And it's just insane.
Imagine just spending that much money on one night.
I know, and they keep showing Finn and Meadow, and they look intimidated as hell. Like, is this what our friggin' wedding is going to be like? Because, you know, nobody... Why would anyone want any kind of thing like that? It's just ridiculous.
No, I don't understand why anyone would want to make such a spectacle out of something that's supposed to be a... you know, just a true family gathering, something special, and they turn it into this, like, World's Fair.
But a great moment is when Johnny wants to talk to Tony, but he's surrounded by U.S. Marshals, right? So he's like, let's go say hi to your dad. And they go to this table with all these elderly people, and they're basically talking about whacking Rusty. But they're saying it in a way where, you know, the other people don't understand. They're like, what? It was a really comical scene.
Don't understand much of anything.
It was great.
I'd love to know where they dug these people up from, because they looked like they had both feet in the grave.
Oh, yeah. Johnny Sack's dad, too, he didn't know what was going on. He just, like, stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
So Tony basically agrees, okay, we'll do it. But he tells Christopher, okay, we're going to do this, but we're going to get somebody else to do it. And I love Christopher's like, I don't think that's a good idea. And he's like, I don't care what you think. He's like, since when? And he realizes everyone is second-guessing Tony now. You know, they're kind of throwing these little things out there. Like, is this such a good idea? You know, and it's like, before, they just would do what he said, right?
Yeah, and you can tell Tony's getting really freaked out about it.
And meanwhile, it's the end of the wedding, and they keep pressuring Johnny Sack that we have to go, we have to go. His daughter and her new husband are leaving. You can almost see the on his face how proud he is and that everything went off without a hitch. Then all of a sudden, they block the limousine as his daughter's leaving, and everyone's saying goodbye. He's like, come on, we gotta go. And they're handcuffing him, and it's really disastrous. And everyone's like, hey, you can't do this. And he just starts bursts into tears, crying in front of everyone. And you see Jenny, she faints, falls backwards, like a sack of potatoes.
The thump they had when she falls was hilarious. My subwoofer just, like, shook the whole floor.
And then, after that, they haul him off, and they show inside, and immediately Phil's like, I lost all respect for Johnny Sack, seeing him cry like that. And Tony's trying to defend him. He's like, tougher guys like that have cried at weddings over their daughter. When it comes to daughters, all bets are off. You can see that Phil wants to be in charge so bad. And that's the thing I was thinking, that Johnny kind of said that he was threatened by Rusty. I think he should be threatened by Phil, don't you?
Absolutely. Phil Leotardo is a viper. And he's just waiting to take his chance to step up. And that whole conversation where they're all sitting around, you could just, again, it goes back to that selfish ideal of all these guys looking out for themselves, looking out for the money that they need. Looking
right.
Out, and it all goes back to that again.
And immediately pounce on that, like, he showed weakness, he cried. Now, here's the part that I really wanted to get to. Now, Vito's been acting kind of strange at the wedding, all moody, and he's like, come on, we gotta go, we're getting out of here. And his wife's like, he never likes weddings. So meanwhile, he disappears from home, his whole family's sleeping, and he sneaks out. Cut to a nice little gay bar, like, I'm talking, like, severe gay, like, leather, like, village people kind of,
like,
stuff.
Yeah, village people, policeman leather stuff.
This scene was, I was like, what, are we watching Queer's Folk all of a sudden?
Yeah, it was really uncomfortable.
And all,
like, what are we doing? And then he turns around, you see it's Vito.
Yeah,
it's like,
there's
just the hat on and the harness.
Yeah, there's these two guys there to make collections. Why they chose, like, I don't know, happy hour to go there, I don't know. And they bump right smack into Vito, who's in, like, the biker leather outfit with the hat, and he's, like, chained to this other guy. Oh, man, it's so nasty.
And the guy he's chained to is just such a queen.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, guys,
the whole effeminate thing going.
Yeah, and he's just like, it's just a joke, guys, it's just a joke. No, it's no big deal. And they're like, yeah, sure, and they take off, and they show Vito immediately goes home and packs his bags, and he gets a gun. And I thought he was going to go hunt down those guys and kill him before they could tell anyone.
See, I thought he was going to kill himself.
Yeah, I thought that too for a bit. And it's like each...
When he pulled into the hotel and called his wife...
And he called Silvio, too.
Called Silvio, or was it... Yeah, he called Silvio. I was like, that's it. You know, he's like, hey, what do you say? What do you know?
And that was great, because it was like you kept guessing, and as every second passed by, you were like, okay, he's not going to do that, he's not going to do that. So they kind of left that hanging, and it cuts to the next day, and Tony's complaining about everyone questioning his judgment to Dr. Melfi. Dr. Melfi says, people are sensing that you're weak. They see an opportunity. You know, if he's weak, he says they're effing jackals, you know, these guys I work with, that they sense weakness. So this is when he shows up the next day, and Dr. Melfi kind of gave him some advice, was to show them that you're still a tough guy, right? So he shows up to the pork store, to Satriel's, where we're at now, right? And they're playing basketball. Bobby, he looks all, I wouldn't say he's skinny, but, you know, he's losing some weight, he's getting in shape.
He's moving around, you know, he's not sitting on his ass.
And my favorite is Polly sitting there getting a tan with one of those mirror reflector things. What the hell are those things?
I don't know.
He's tanning.
I've never seen anyone use one except in TV and movies.
I know, and Tony's staring at all their arms, their biceps and stuff. And you get the sense, and this was great, we were talking about Buscemi earlier. This is a great scene. He's picking out the strongest of the pack, right?
Yeah, but it's subtle. You know, you don't realize what's going on until it cuts back to Tony's face, and then you go, oh, that's what he's doing.
And that's what they go, they're inside, and they're eating, hey, Tony, and everything, you want something to eat? And he goes, no, I'm good. And he's looking around the room, and he picks Perry, and he starts yelling at him about slamming the fridge real loud. And, of course, Perry, we already know he's a hothead from the beginning of the episode. and he's arguing with them, you know, like, I didn't do anything, and Tony gets him riled up, and this is basically what happens.
Philadelphia lawyer.
Don't do it!
No, don't do it!
My arm!
What's that, huh? You got anything else to say?
So Tony beats the crap out of the guy.
Yeah, and then the scene after, when he goes into the bathroom and he vomits the blood into the toilet and he goes to the sink and he's like washing off his face and he looks up and he leers into the mirror and just that smirk that he gives, it's just like, whoa.
It's really creepy.
It's really intense.
And you could see he did exactly what he wanted to do, and that was to show that he's still a tough guy. He's still the boss.
That right there, that scene, that's the award winner for James Gandolfini this year.
Right, that was a great episode.
There really was.
All right, let's move on to the next episode, which is Live Free or Die. This shows what happens to Vito, right? Vito's life is totally screwed up once those guys saw him in the fag joint, as they call it.
Yeah, everybody, the word gets around.
Yeah, I mean, it starts out, Christopher's at an AA meeting, and he goes outside and he goes, hey, you're Christopher Moltisanti. He's like, yeah. And he's like, hey, my so-and-so guy saw your guy Vito, he's at a fag joint or whatever. It's just like, it gets out just like that. And I love how Christopher can't wait to go tell everyone at the bottom of being. He's like, hey, you guys wouldn't, you know.
I think that the one that wanted to do it the most that was Murmur, his friend. He just kept cracking gay jokes and pissing Tony off.
they don't care about anyone. But Vito's laying alone with his Gumar, and she's always asking him why they never have sex. And what does he say? It's because of the diet he's on. He can't get it up or something. That's his excuse.
Some stupid excuse.
Or Tony and Christopher have lined up the Italians to take care of Rusty, right? For Johnny.
Yeah.
And there's that weird guy, Corky, that he talks to. Has he been on previous seasons? That weird guy who shows up?
I don't remember him. I don't remember him at all.
But what's funny is he's talking to about the guys that he needs to enlist to kill Rusty, and he's like, so is that stuff about Vito? Is that true? It's like it's even gotten to this freaking heroin addict. He even heard about Vito. And I love it. First, Clifford's like, hey, that's none of your business. But then he starts cracking jokes, too.
Yeah.
And then there's this subplot with Carmela. She shows up to Respect House, and everything's gone. Basically, her dad looted the joint and sold everything. Uh-huh. And I love it. He's like, I've had enough of your crap for years. I've taken your crap for years.
Yet her dad was the whole reason why the spec house has been such a disaster. What do you do, build the house with pine or something?
Well,
like the softest wood possible.
Yeah, he would. And Tony would never, no matter how many times she reminded him, he wouldn't call any inspectors to let it go. Now, Tony, he was defending Vito. He's worried about this because Vito's like his best guy, isn't he? He's the guy who makes all the money.
Big money earner. He was the guy that dealt with all the construction and all that. So he's a big guy.
And he doesn't, you know, he's like, let's not jump to conclusions. He wants to know if this is true or not. So he gets Silvio to go talk to Vito's wife. And he's like, so how are things in the romance department? And she's like, he's a good father. He's a loving husband. And he's like, okay. And I love he goes to the car and he goes, you know, my business is women. I'm around a lot of women. That woman ain't getting laid.
Just the way he delivers the line is so classic. You gotta love Steve Van Zandt.
And earlier in the episode, Vito is just driving, and his car breaks down, and he winds up in New Hampshire in a storm, and he stays at this bed and breakfast.
That cracked me up, because it probably went over most people's head, but when he gets out that big red parka, he looked like the Kool-Aid man. I was like, oh yeah!
You know what was funnier is I just thought, remember now, he's driving in a hellacious rainstorm and he's eating ribs.
It was so funny because you know, before he's trying to get all skinny and he's machine gunning the carrots in prior episodes, and now he's just sucking on these big, thick ribs like there's nothing left.
And his cell phone rings, and he sees it's Phil calling him. So he throws it out the window. He's got to get rid of it anyway. So later on, they show a construction crew. They're cleaning up the side of the road, and this guy finds a cell phone. So he calls. I don't remember what if Tony calls him or he calls Tony. But
after Syl comes out from seeing Vito's wife, Tony decides to give Vito's phone a call again, just to see if he picks up.
And this is what happens.
Hello,
Vito. You got him?
Who?
Put Vito on the phone, asshole.
Fuck you, motherfucker.
What, are you sucking his dick?
I bet I kick your ass, you fucking faggot.
Yeah, that's right. Telephone tough guy. Put Vito on the phone.
Look, there ain't no Vito, man. I found the phone on the side of the road.
What?
Hang on a second.
He throws the phone under the steamroller.
Where'd you find the phone? Hello?
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 Motherfucker.
I love that. Telephone tough guy. Oh, that was genius. That's what scenes like that, that's why I love this show.
Absolutely. It's serious, and yet it makes you laugh your ass off.
Oh, yeah, and Tony goes to Dr. Melfi to kind of talk about being gay, and he's doing all the regular stuff, like it's wrong, it's a sin, you know, it's not right, and... You know, she's like, what about other men in your, you know, in your group that have gone to prison for long? He's like, you get a pass for that. And I love it. He's like, by the way, I was never incarcerated very long to have to worry about that, okay? And he gets really defensive about it. But then he admits that he really doesn't care. He said, I'll salute, do whatever you want. He doesn't care. This guy's his best earner. But he's getting pressure from everybody. They want this, what is the word for it? Fanook?
Yeah, I've heard him called a Fanook.
And that's basically what happens here is Meadow kind of overhears Carmella talking to Angie about it. And she's like, I can figure out what you're talking about. Finn saw him giving a guy a blowjob. And they're like, what? And then she's like, Tony, come here. And he's like, what? And I love the next thing you see, Tony's brought Finn there in front of everybody to tell them about Vito. All right, so this is what happens when Finn tells everybody about good old Vito.
Let me ask you a question. Before he cornered you in the porta potty, when the security guy was sucking him off...
Well, once it was the other way around.
What?
Vito was blowing the security guard.
Son of a bitch!
Catch him, not pitch him.
Pauly...
He's not going to know I told you?
You ain't going to have no problem from Vito. Believe me.
What are you going
to
do?
It'll be okay. Get him to pay for some therapy.
Well, look, why don't you go out front, get yourself a sandwich, any kind you like. Huh?
Any kind you like. Special thing.
And, when we're done here, somebody will take you back. All right.
Tony breathes really loud.
I want to kill the fat faggot myself. Be a fucking honor. Cut off his piece of deal and feed it to him.
Piece of deal?
I can't believe I stuck up for him. I feel like I've been stabbed in the heart.
Well, we can't have him here in our social club no more. I mean, that much I do.
Social club.
He's got to go.
No figs in the social club.
Yeah, I don't know.
What the fuck? What is there to think about?
Sit down.
Fuck that, I'll say it again. What the fuck is there to think about?
You gonna take care of his kids? High after he's gone?
It's true. They didn't do nothing. Poor little guys.
Poor little guys.
Sit down.
I love Christopher.
I'm sorry if I yelled, T.
He's such a numbnuts.
How much more betrayal can I take?
The look Tony gives him after he says that.
Vito a fag. Big construction tycoon. Tone, when he was always talking about greasing the union. Who knew that's what he meant?
Does Stephen breathe as loud as Tony?
Walls.
Yeah.
Understood?
That was...
Do you think they put that breathing on post-production?
I know, because if you've seen other movies with James Gandolfini, he breathes like that.
That is just so bizarre. He's just so... So that nasal huffing. At times, it's like distracting while you're watching the show.
Right, and there's this stuff with Meadow and her job, and she's always so high and mighty, but yeah. Finn always kind of says, well, look at your family. What do you think's going to happen to Vito? That Polly guy scares the shit out of me. What do you think's going to happen? She's like, I hate when you talk about my family like that. She's so just... What does she think her family does, you know?
She's pretentious.
Right.
And Finn is the only... He's the only normal person on the entire show. You feel bad for him that he's in this situation. And I think, you know, after they have that argument, I think even Finn is thinking, you know, how much can I really love this girl, you know, enough to be in this my entire life?
And I started thinking about this.
I don't see them lasting much longer.
When he first proposed to her, he was really scared for his life about Vito. Now everyone knows his secret.
But when he first proposed to her, didn't he propose to her because he knew Vito's secret? Weren't they going to break up?
I think so. He was afraid for his life. He knew he would be safe if he proposed to her. Vito is in New Hampshire now, and he's looking around. It's an openly gay community, right?
Yes, he's in Gayland.
And the episode ends with him kind of visiting this little shop, and it's an antique shop. And he's like, that's a really nice piece. That's the most expensive piece. You've got quite an eye for this. And he sees a license plate outside, and it says, live free or die. And there's kind of, you know, we were talking about this before, like little parallels going on. Like, what Tony wants to do, they show him... We forgot about this. At the beginning, he's sitting outside, just relaxing, the wind through the trees, and there's this rattling sound in his air conditioner, and it won't stop, and finally he takes a piece off and throws it. He just wants to relax, but everything keeps biting him in the ass, like all the people around him and everything. You can't just say, I'm going to live my life this way, because he's got all this crap going on, right? So let's go ahead and cut to the next episode, and it's Luxury Lounge. Now, this is like, there's... two things going on in this episode, right? We've got Rusty.
The little Carmine who everyone thinks is retarded.
Yeah, I love when Tony even says, it's a known fact, he's retarded.
I'll never forget the line at that one episode where he goes, I've got 10 films under my subspecies. What?
He doesn't even know what he's talking about.
No.
Tony hosts a banquet at Vesuvio's to celebrate new blood coming in, right? And they're all complaining about Artie's game being off. Like, the food's not that great. It's taking forever. They're all talking.
Yeah. And then Phil gives his speech. Is that where he goes off on Vito?
Yeah. And it's all about Vito. And Tony's always rolling his eyes. Oh, and this is where Christopher says, you know, hey, can I take some time off? I need to go to L.A. and deal with this stuff. And that's when he tells him about little Carmine being retarded. He's like, I'm going to make you a lot of money. So,
what's so bad about the whole thing is when Chris confronts Tony in the parking lot after having the dinner, Chris is like, I told you about this at the hospital.
And he's like, I was in an effing coma. Because we saw in that episode, he was sitting there, and he was out of it when Christopher was telling him that
stuff. He was drooling. Carmella was putting chapstick on these beet red lips from having that, from being intubated. And Tony's just in La La Land, and Chris is, hey, I got this movie thing. Yeah,
and
whatever.
Then this whole thing is like, okay, we've got Artie. And Artie has always driven me nuts as a character because he's just a nut job, right?
Yeah, he's insane.
He's definitely insane. And Benny is always hanging out there and hitting on his new hostess, right?
his new Gumar.
Yeah, and you can tell it annoys Artie because Artie kind of had an eye for her.
Oh, and she's absolutely gorgeous.
And they keep showing these little things going on where different guys are picking up the little credit card machines in different places. Mm-hmm. And they show, what's funny, they show Iraqi guys, right? Jewish guys, they're all selling to the same people, right?
Yeah, and they show him pick up stuff from, I think the topper was whenever they picked up the credit card swiper from the Hasidic Jew at the hotel.
Yeah.
And yet, that Hasidic Jew is getting money for swiping these cards, and it's going to these, who know, they're Muslims. So they hate Jews. Who knows if they're terrorists or what?
Yeah, I just go back to the fact that not that they're Muslims, but that they were buying a bunch of Tech 9 machine guns.
The last time we heard the term Tech 9 was Columbine.
Yeah. I just think whenever I think Tech 9, isn't that Jack Burton's weapon of choice before it was shattered in Big Trouble in Little China?
Yeah, that automatic weapon with the, that holdout... barrel on it, the flash protector.
Yeah.
Things are intense.
So meanwhile, Christopher goes to Hollywood and immediately falls off the wagon. He's like getting a prostitute, he's doing coke, he's drinking, and
again, I gotta say, the prostitute was gorgeous. That was one that was one thing about this episode.
And what's
so many beautiful women in it.
And the next day he has a meeting with Sir Ben Kingsley.
Which was just absolutely hilarious. Because Ben Kingsley he's just playing it like, who are these people? Why are they here? I want to just relax.
Yeah, and Ben Kingsley's like...
Carmine are just all over him.
My interest is script dependent.
Yeah, coming from the man who did... A Sound of Thunder, and most recently, Blood Rain.
Yeah, he just worked with Uwe Boll, so, I mean, Christopher might have a chance of getting Ben Kingsley here.
Script dependent, my ass.
He's like, we could go A-list down the hard genre, and Ridley, Toby Hooper. And he says, like, James Wan, or whatever, and he's like, who? And he's like, he did Saw, and I was waiting for him to go, it's a digital horror movie, but he didn't.
Low-budget digital horror movie. He made millions.
And he talks about Tim Daly's character. He's done different TV shows, like Law & Order, The SUV.
And wasn't Michael Imperioli, wasn't he on Law & Order for a while?
Yeah, he was.
So he was like...
He's going to be on there again this week, too.
The SUV.
And Lauren Bacall comes walking by, and Christopher's kissing her ass, and... they're talking about award shows, and you can tell they don't even see Chris and Lil Carmine there. They're not even looking at them, you know?
No.
And then Ben Kingsley's like, well, I gotta go, I'm off of the meeting, and they just follow him. He doesn't ask them to come with him.
Yeah.
And he goes into this room, the luxury lounge, where he gets free stuff. And I love Chris's face when he realizes Lil Carmine and him are like, is all this free? They're giving him watches and Eye Rivers, and I love, he's like, can I have one of those? And the lady just looks at him weird.
Yeah, and hands it to Ben Kingsley. Like, she just completely ignores him.
So meanwhile, Artie is visited by some American Express guys who are saying they're no longer taking the American Express charges at his place because somebody's stealing. There's a lot of fraud going on. So Artie has this insane meeting at his restaurant where he's telling everybody about it, and he's basically making everyone feel guilty. The coat girl, like, I don't know who, a cook in the back, like, just all this stuff. It was hilarious.
It turns out it's the hot hostess that
screwing around with Benny.
With Benny.
So
aka Vinny.
And that's what's funny is Artie
D'Annunzio.
And Artie goes up and he goes, can I talk to you? Her name's Martina. Can I talk to you a little bit? And she immediately bursts into tears. Oh, I'm sorry, whatever. Benny said we wouldn't get caught and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know about Benny. I know Benny's like this crazy guy, and I've seen him beat the crap out of people before. I've also seen him get the crap beat out of him before by Phil with a cane or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So Artie goes to his house to yell at him about all this stuff, like, you know, what are you doing running the scam in my my restaurant and blah, blah, blah. And Benny's like, I've had about enough of you. And they get in a fight, but Artie kicks his ass.
Oh, and, yeah, he just launches on his ass.
And, you know, that's the one thing about Sopranos, is the violence is so brutal, I couldn't tell if he smashed his skull in or something, you know? The way
when he was done, it looked like he was pretty beat up.
I thought the guy was dead. So
So
the next day, what I love is, and this is the way Tony does it. He even does it with his own son, AJ. He takes people out on a boat who he needs to talk to. And he's like, yeah, I've got to talk to you. Are you out of your freaking mind? And he's like, yeah, he shouldn't have done that at your place, but you should have come and talked to me. You didn't have to put the guy in the hospital. Have you seen anyone? No one else can get away with talking to Tony the way Artie does. He's just so sarcastic and rude to him.
And yeah, and, you know, Tony allows it because he knows that Artie is completely unstable. I mean, need we go back to, what, the second season where Artie goes after Tony with a shotgun?
Right.
And plus, they just grew up together. And Artie, you know, Tony's always been there for Artie.
Now, when Benny tells Tony that he's going to kill him, he's going to nail his balls to a chair or something, and Tony's like, yeah, okay. I got to tell you something. Drop it. It's not going to happen. So he says, in fact, you're going to take your family to Vesuvio's for your parents' anniversary. And I love, and Artie can't let it go. He starts talking about a drink, like, well, how'd you like a martina? It's like a martini, but it goes down real easy. know? So Benny gets pissed off and goes into the kitchen and shoves Artie's hand into boiling spaghetti sauce and...
Like the first layer of skin, like a glove came off.
Oh, man. And he's got this big old bandage on his hand. Just Artie's a pathetic person.
Yeah.
Tony's surrounded by just total losers.
Well, I think that's how Tony likes it, because he can control them.
And I love Tony goes up to him, he's like, can I talk to you for a second? You go around pitying yourself. You need to get help. I know somebody you can talk to. And he immediately takes offense to this.
Then he tells him, stop talking to the guests. No one wants to hear your stupid stories.
Yeah, because they keep showing Artie throughout the episode saying, pretty soon we're going to have to put a high chair here for you two. And he says it to every customer. He just annoys the hell out of everyone.
Yeah, and everybody's going to the new restaurant, Don Giovanni or Giovanno or whatever. And no one's going to Vesuvio anymore.
Yeah, so meanwhile, Christopher, back in Hollywood, they keep bothering Ben Kingsley, right? And
yeah, he keeps calling Ben Kingsley on the phone.
He's like, I sent him a muffin basket, but he still declined on the offer to be in the movie. I just sent him a muffin basket. And, of course, they meet up with him on an elevator, and Christopher starts, you know, trying to intimidate him about the free stuff. And he goes, actually, I give a lot of it to charities. The real horror is the awards gift baskets. You get all this free stuff, like $30,000 gift baskets. It's really ridiculous. So a little light bulb goes off in Christopher's head. So we see Lauren McCall coming out of an award show, and this is what happens.
Well, I can take it from here.
You sure?
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay,
thank
you're
you.
Welcome. Good night.
Night. Get the
f***
away from me!
What are you doing?
And he punches Lauren McCall.
Don't die!
Mrs. McCall, don't move. Yes, an ambulance by Robinson's May.
Jeez, my
f***ing
arm.
Unfortunately, I had the edited version where I edited out the F-bombs there, but... She says, Jesus, my fucking arm.
But it's so funny that, you know, here's a woman, Lauren Bacall. I mean, everything you remember is Bogey and Bacall.
Mm-hmm.
And here she is just effing it up. And it's so funny.
I love that. And Christopher returns to Tony with all this cool swag that he's got from L.A. And Tony's going through it, and he's like... you know, none of this would have happened if you hadn't been in L.A. You know, you got to take care of your stuff here. And he's like, you know the sacrifices of Adriana? And he's like, how many times are you going to play the Adriana card?
Well, it's so funny. It shows Chris's natural, again, selfish attitude whenever he goes to Tony and he offers him the two tickets to Australia. And Tony's like, 10 hours on a plane? I don't think so.
Right, and
so
it's...
then Chris pulls something else shitty out of the bag, and Tony's like, no, and then Tony goes into the bag and pulls out some beautiful watch, and then he's looking at some kind of perfume and all this, and Chris is just looking like he's just been, you know, robbed, like he was Lauren Bacall getting punched in the face.
That goes back to Artie, and these people come in late. He says they're going to eat whatever I make them. And earlier in the episode, you see him shoot a rabbit in his garden of these seeds that he got from Italy.
Eating the arugula, the seeds that he brought back from Italy.
I think using the same rifle he's going to kill Tony with, maybe? I don't know.
Possibly.
His wife's yelling at him about firing a gun in city limits. You've been warned!
When that, yeah, she's been warned. Great. There's some stability in the head. But when he shoots that rabbit, man, it looked like he actually shot that rabbit.
Yeah, that didn't look like a robot rabbit or animatronic rabbit.
I've seen, you know, shot animals as a kid when my father had a garden. And, you know, groundhogs, rabbits, skunks. When that thing went down, it looked like it was actually hit with a bullet. So cheers to the guys at the Sopranos Special Effects Department.
So it ends with Artie looking at his old recipes, and he's a nut job. That's all I got to say about that. So,
yeah, is it like his grand or great-grandmother's, you know, recipe book that's, like, written in Italian or something?
So last night's episode is Johnny Cakes. And this is Vito back in New Hampshire.
Gayland.
And it's also an AJ-centric episode where...
And for the first time, a bearable AJ-centric episode.
Right. He's been a very obnoxious, annoying character for a long time. Same as Meadow was. Meadow's character changed a little, but...
But she's still irritating.
Tony and Carmela's children are horrible, you know.
Well, you got AJ who's just the... he's just stupid, you know? He wants to please his father, but he's just clueless.
And Tony puts up with him in a lot of ways because he sees himself in him. Tony was very similar.
And then you have Meadow, who's just so self-righteous. It's like she wants to distance herself from everything bad about her family, but in that process, she just makes herself so incredibly self-righteous to everything around her. Like, she's so much better than everyone else.
And there's times where AJ's trying to get through to his dad and kind of talk to him about stuff. Like, he's like, what are we going to do about Junior? And Tony's like, don't worry about it. That's my business. And AJ gets all pissy. And I love there's a scene where it shows AJ at work at Blockbuster with his buddy, how they just completely ignore the customers. They're screwing around.
They're watching The Hunted.
Watching The Hunted, imitating the knife fight between Tommy Lee Jones.
Anybody that can actually watch The Hunted, I give credit to, because that movie...
They're dropping F-bombs left and right in front of a lady and her child.
Yeah, this poor little kid who's probably like 3 years old, and they're just, no, you gotta hold the effing knife this way, so you don't effing get stabbed.
Oh, and let's not forget, at the very beginning of the show, Patsy and Bert go to the local new Starbucks trying to offer protection, and the guy's trying to explain to him, like, corporate doesn't care about that stuff. And he's like, well, we could hurt their employees. And he's like, when I go, somebody else will just come to replace me. So basically, they're intimidating proof. What is the word for that? They can't intimidate Starbucks.
Yeah, I love how they come in and, like, we're your neighborhood protection agency. It's like... Okay, yeah, that'll work with a large conglomerate company.
What if you came to work one day and the windows were smashing? I don't think corporate would care, to tell you the truth, sir. And he walks out and he goes, this freaking neighborhood, the little guy is getting squashed, or whatever, like they're the little guy.
Yeah, the guys that are going in and basically robbing in the daylight people of their well-earned money, and it's the little guy that's getting... squashed.
I love that. And it's also got Tony and Sylvia and Chris hanging out in front of Satriales, and all of a sudden this hot Juliana Margulies from ER shows up.
And I never found attractive until last night's episode.
Yeah, me neither, really. And her name is Juliana.
She looked really good.
And
yeah.
She's trying to buy the poultry store for Jamba Juice. It's, you know, showing the urban sprawl coming into their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little kind of thing there. Temptation for Tony, my new hot chick. right?
Yeah.
But it cut to Vito, and he's having his Johnny Cakes at Jim's Diner, and there's a fire the night before, and everyone's running to this fire. Vito sees the guy save...
he saves, like, a little girl.
Yeah, he saves a little girl, and Vito's kind of wowed by this, and you tell Vito likes the guy.
Vito's in love.
Yeah, Vito is in love, which this is storyline is... And, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with homophobia or anything like that. It has to do with Vito is just an uncomfortable person to look at.
He really is.
And
he waddles.
The other guy...
waddle that he has.
His walk reminds me of the way Axl Rose would dance on stage for Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, it's just this, like, side-to-side duck waddle. You're waiting for him to go, Aflac!
No, knees! Knees! That's what it reminds me of. But,
take me down to Paradise City.
So, okay, Vito's gay, right? What I don't understand is how anyone finds Vito attractive from any sex, the opposite or otherwise.
Well, you know, hey.
He's a likable guy, right?
Whatever floats your boat, you know?
Carl invites Vito on over to talk with his buddies, and they're all queens, you realize.
Carl the cook.
Yeah, Carl the cook. And, you know, he's like, you should get a bike. I got a fat boy here. And Vito's like, oh, those are nice forks or whatever. And then he goes in for the kiss, and Vito decks the guy. And they get into this fight, and then he knocks Vito down. He kicks Vito's ass, basically. And he's like, you know, fucking closet queen or whatever. And Vito starts to pick up a pipe, and he goes, dirty fighter, huh? He is such a dirty fighter. He's going to hit him with a pipe. And you're wondering why. Why did he do this? What is he scared of? He's now in, like, this area where gay people are everywhere, right?
Yeah, I think it's just, again, the natural defense mechanism that Vito has built in.
Right, and what he says is, sometimes you tell a lie so long, you don't know when to stop. It was almost like he felt like he had to be on his guard even there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's these little scenes where he keeps hearing the motorcycle ride around, and the guy's on his mind. He walks by the diner, and he sees the guy in there. And finally he goes and he tells him this, and the guy understands. And we're cutting to way later in the episode, but we got to talk about this.
Yeah, we've got to get it out of the way first.
Vito's riding on a motorcycle with the other guy in the countryside, and it was the most hilarious scene I've ever seen. Vito riding on a motorcycle. And then cut to the scene where he's laying in the grass. They've had a nice picnic. Carl's
with
taking
all the wildflowers around on the
it's
ground.
It's very romantic. Carl's taking his shirt off. It's like showing the most unattractive person in the world, you know, Vito. And I was like, I still don't understand what Carl sees in Vito. Vito's supposedly writing this book, and he doesn't know any...
Marciano, and he doesn't know anything about it.
He has none of his facts straight. And you'd think Carl would catch on to this, but maybe he knows he's running from something. And there's even a scene where Vito calls home to talk to his wife because he stole a cell phone. And I'm wondering if he'll be tracked down by that. That was really a stupid move by him.
Yeah, I think he was desperate to just talk to his wife and make sure his kids were okay.
And the person
he had to tell her where to get the money out from under the baseboard in the living room or whatever.
Right, and the person is staying at a bed and breakfast, so maybe they don't even live there. So maybe he's okay, I don't know. Because at the end of this episode, I was wondering if we'll ever see Vito again.
Oh, we will.
Because I'm wondering what's going to happen with him. Meanwhile, Tony continues to be tempted by Juliana, who shows up at the Bada Bing to offer him another Jamba Juice offer. And again, the same thing with Tony. I don't understand how anyone finds Tony attractive, because this is what I forgot. The episode begins with Tony and Carmela having sex, and I was almost ready to tune out at that point.
Yeah, if two things you have to deal with. It's one, Vito and Carl in the wildflower field laying on their sides moving in to kiss, and then there's Carmela, who is just about the most manly woman I've ever seen in my life. Tony might as well make love to a man.
And meanwhile, we've got AJ, who's on the club scene. He's hanging out with this guy named Hernan, who AJ has sold his drums for all this money, and everyone's like, oh, the gangster's son, or whatever, and they're all, you know, he's just got friends that are using him, basically.
Every time he sits down, somebody's asking him, you know, hey, can you put in a word with your father for me? And he's like, just like, yeah.
He's like, yeah, okay, and there's this, he's handed this drink bill that's like, what is it, like $1,800 or something?
Yeah, it was $1,800.
I could never figure out if he paid it or not. Did he have that much money on him, or?
I guess he did, because he took money out of his pocket and put it in the thing.
And there's this girl talking about Omerta. Like, what are you going to do about your uncle trying to kill your dad or whatever? He goes, I'll probably have to do something about it. She goes, oh, you're so tense and all this stuff. You're so intense, and giving him
a
massage.
You can tell he just loves it every minute of it.
It's so hilarious. But basically what we figure out, what AJ is planning on doing, is he's planning on killing Uncle Junior, or his great Uncle Junior. He's going to go... And I thought he was going to do it. I pictured him, like, stabbing him in the chest or whatever. So he goes to the home to visit Junior, who's a freaking whack job. I love how Junior's just yelling at all the people, and you see they're just, like, not even aware of their surroundings, eating their food and stuff.
Except Junior, who's screaming at the top of his lungs.
So here's what happens when AJ goes to visit Uncle Junior.
He's over here. Brother, you have a visitor.
What? Anthony! My nephew. Take me home. I want to go home.
Knife!
That's not my knife.
I love that. That's not my knife.
That's classic. It's not my knife.
And Tony goes to pick up AJ at the police headquarters, does the thing that Tony always does, slams him up against, trying to knock some sense in this kid. He doesn't understand why his son is such an idiot. He's like, Dad, but whenever you watch The Godfather, you say you love the part where Michael Corleone kills the two guys. That's your favorite scene in the movie. And he's just like, oh, AJ, you make me want to cry. That's
a movie.
It's not real life. You gotta grow up. And I love AJ goes, bah! And he's like, was he really throwing up or trying to throw up?
No, I think he was just trying, the little prick.
And he's just, Tony's like, get in the car. Yeah. And of course he says, we'll never tell your mom about this. He's like, you know, you could have been brought up on attempted murder charges. Appreciate the sentiment, which I thought was hilarious. I appreciate it that you were trying to kill the guy who shot me, but, you know.
Oh, and we forgot the couple scenes before that in the club when AJ starts having panic attacks.
Right. At first you think maybe he's ODing, because earlier they showed him, like, snorting something. I don't know if it was coke or what.
He was snorting coke.
And he starts... You could tell he's freaking out, and he goes to the restroom and passes out, and a guy who's a doctor says, have you taken any drugs? He says, no. And he goes, do you have a history of panic attacks? And you realize right then what's going on. He's inherited his dad's panic attacks. Because didn't Tony say his dad went through the same thing?
Yeah.
And
so like father, like son.
And meanwhile, Tony decides he's going to screw Juliana. He's sold the poultry store because she's offered him basically $500,000.
Well, do you think he really goes to her apartment planning to do that?
I don't know. There's the way
whenever he's getting dressed and Carmela's, you know, buttoning his shirt and all that and telling him how much he loves him and all. I can't help but think that he didn't plan on doing it.
There's a great scene where Carmela's buttoning his shirt and he's like, you've taken care of me, baby. You know, you always look out for me. And, there's that great scene where he's sitting there, and she's kind of hovering right next to him, and he's signing all the papers, sign here, and here, and here, and here, and it goes on forever.
Juliana.
Yeah.
He's already at her apartment signing the papers after he gets dressed at home, and he's there with the champagne to celebrate, supposedly.
Mm-hmm. And as soon as he's done, they just start making out furiously until he kind of freaks out and stops.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, you know, we're talking about the different kinds of, like, he keeps on saying he's got a new lease on life. Carmela, she was there for him while he was in the hospital. And, you know, it does show it's a different Tony, doesn't it? When he
certainly is a Tony that exercises self-control.
Right.
We have never seen that in any episode so far, especially in a sexual situation.
Right, and it, one thing I kind of wonder is, like, a lot of people, I don't really care a lot of times what people think of the same show I'm watching, if I like. But, you know, people are very critical of The Sopranos, especially people who have been around this long. What is it, season six? And they're like, yeah. You know, why are they wasting time on Artie? Why are they wasting time on AJ? Why are they wasting time with Vito's storyline? But I think it's all intertwined in a way. I mean, think about AJ's going through a thing like Tony did. Tony sees himself in AJ, aimless, didn't know what to do with his life, sucked at school, didn't know how to do anything. I mean,
he's just looking for his spot right now.
Right.
I mean, the kid's an idiot and he's selfish, but that only has to do with the way Tony and Carmella raised him and the situation he's in.
And I think Vito's storyline in a lot of ways is about freedom. He's free right now at this place.
He absolutely is, but I don't think he's going to be free for long. I really don't see it ending well for Vito. The people that he's been connected to all these years, it's like that line that Sil always quotes from Godfather 3 when Michael Corleone says, you know, what is it, like, once I get out, they pull me back in?
Right.
He's never going to be out.
There's even the moment in the episode where Phil asks Tony about, you know, this Vito situation, and Tony doesn't want to talk about it. He's like, don't worry about it. It's my situation. He's like, yeah, but my sister married the Fanook or whatever. He's like, don't worry about it. No one is letting it die down and letting it go away. They're all always saying, where's Vito? What are we going to do about this Vito? And you get the sense that Tony just wants it to go away. Don't worry about it. Let the guy disappear or whatever.
Phil will never let it go. Just like last season when Tony's nephew, played by Steve Buscemi, killed his son or nephew or brother, I can't remember, some family member. He was never going to let that go.
And Phil always brings it up, too. He goes, I look the other way. You know, he's like, dude, you bring it up all the time, you know? It's going to be a happy moment when Phil Leotardo is killed. Am I right?
If ever.
Now, there's a great moment at the end. They bookend the show with Patsy and Bert picking up their payment at Caputo's poultry store. And he tells them that Tony sold the building. And Patsy's all angry, and he goes, what's happening to the neighborhood?
And see, that also, I'm worried about Patsy, because Patsy was the guy, Tony had to put out a hit on his brother, because his brother did something, it was like his twin brother, and Patsy was the guy that wanted to kill Tony for a while. Mm-hmm. And then he finally kind of snapped out of it. So Patsy is just as dangerous as Paulie at this point.
Right. Well, I think we pretty much covered all the episodes, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's it. Until next, you know, there's only 4 episodes left until 2007, so enjoy them while you can, people.
So in a couple weeks, we'll do another Sopranos sit-down. Yeah, it might be easier on us if we cover 2 at a time. Maybe we could go into more detail on them, you know?
Yeah, because when we sit down and include the show, and I'm sure the fans understand this, when we include this into our standard Nowhere in Mulberry episode, it's going to take it from what we normally run about 80 to 90 minutes, it's going to take us well over 100 minutes.
Right.
Because these segments normally take us like 25 minutes.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how many people listen to this episode. Hopefully there's an audience out there. I mean, we both love Sopranos. We love it.
It's one of those shows that you can't help but go, you know, how have you not seen it? And people go, well, I don't like mob stuff, I don't like that.
The show's fantastic.
The show is much more than just violence and mob. It's a very deep character
but
study.
But the thing, this show is so funny. I am in tears almost every episode.
There are hilarious
moments in every single episode, no matter what horrible thing is going on.
What, like the Flintstones?
No, more intense than that. And another thing, can you ever tell what is going to happen on the show from week to week?
No. But you don't, see, that's the thing. You have ideas of what's going to happen, but you don't necessarily want to dwell on it. You want to let it play out. Unlike network shows like Lost, where they just tickle your ass with a feather every week, and you try and guess what's going to happen, or you get frustrated and just give up. This, they give you enough, or you just enjoy it. It's just so well done that you don't, you know, you go, well, you know what, if they never come back to it, that's just the way it is. But it's like, one week they deal with Vito, and then the next they deal with the wedding and Rusty, you know, and then they come back to Vito.
Right.
You know, it's just, you don't, you just let it play out. You know that you're in good hands.
End of story.
Right. Exactly, Tony. And that's the end of our story. That's our Soprano sit-down episode. I hope everyone enjoyed it. Give us some feedback. Tell us what you think. Dimpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us if we went on too long. Hell, send us some voicemail and we'll play it on the next Soprano sit-down. What do you say, Bill?
Absolutely. Nowhereinmulberry.com. Visit the Mulberry Cultural Center, the forum. Post in the general chat, the Nowhere in Mulberry chat. Maybe we should create a little Sopranos thread just for people that are fans of the show.
Dial 1-206-202-3491 and leave us a voicemail about what you think of our Sopranos edition. Did we skim over way too many things? Or hey, this is turning out to be a long show, and I hope you enjoyed it.
You think this feast pays for itself?
These are different times.
Some things don't change.
Do we need negative press?
You saved my life.
We got a bond. You see this? It's gotta be done now, tonight.
Your bulkhead are coming.
What are you talking about?
You owe me money. Mind your business, Bobby.
Call an ambulance!
Casting.
End of story.